Day closed today is Royalton, 2 hour late in Aitken, Bemidji, Black Duck, Brainerd, Castlake, Bena, Crosby, Ironton, Crosslake Community School, LaPorte, Little Falls, Monaga, Neosheng in Mille Lacs, Onamia, Park Rapids, Pequot Lakes, Pillager, Pine River Bacchus, Red Lake, Sabika, Trek North in Bemidji, Uppsala, Verndale, Voyagers Expeditionary in Bemidji, Walker, Hackensack, Akeley, Wadena, Deer Creek, all those schools are 2 hour late, and e-learning in Staples, Motley this morning. Support for KAXE comes from the Timberlake Lodge, hosting a holiday dinner show Tuesday, December 16th, with performances by Greg Kaiser, PK Mayo, and Miltich family, and members of the LaPlante family. More information is available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
Starting in 2026, tax rules related to charitable giving are shifting. This means right now might be the right time to give to KAXE and other nonprofits. Check with a financial advisor to see if it is a good time for you to make a gift. Your support keeps People Powered Radio strong and ensures a bright future for KAXE.
And this is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org. Time now for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. Secretary of State Steve Simon will run for a fourth term. The Minnesota Star Tribune was one of two outlets that broke the news Tuesday morning. Simon told the Strib he wants to continue to shield Minnesota voters' data from a, quote, federal power grab by the Trump administration. The DFLer was first elected to the office in 2014 after serving for a decade in the legislature. He won his first race by a tight margin and the last two by nearly 10 percentage points. While Governor Tim Walz is running to be the first three-term governor in Minnesota history, longer stints in office aren't unusual for secretaries of state. Two of Simon's predecessors served at least 24 years. The Star Tribune reports a large majority of Minnesotans are confident in the state's election system, and Simon touted the high voter turnout rate. Former Republican state legislator Tad Jude of Maple Grove is the only other declared candidate for the office so far. In a September interview with a St. Cloud radio station, he echoed Minnesota Republicans' suspicions of Simon, suggesting he has something to hide because he doesn't want to cooperate with the Department of Justice. Nine northern Minnesota electric cooperatives and municipal utilities can use new grant funds to improve grid resilience. The State Department of Commerce announced $5.3 million in state grid resilience grants Monday. Up to a quarter million was awarded to each project and can be used to strengthen distribution systems, increase capacity, and reduce power outages. Roseau and Red River Valley Co-op Power will use the funds to move overhead power lines underground, reducing the potential impact of severe weather events. And the North Itasca Electric Co-op and Cooperative Light and Power Association of Lake County will put the grants toward wildfire mitigation projects. An East Range city is closing in on what will likely be one of the largest levy increases in the state. Biwabik's preliminary levy that was used to calculate proposed property tax statements was 40% higher than last year. It was the ninth largest proposed increase in terms of percentage of any Minnesota city. Iron Range Today reports Biwabik officials worked the levy down to a 30% increase at a budget meeting Monday. The city didn't have an administrator when it set its preliminary levy in September, which contributed to some of the jump. Administrator Michael Schultz has now been on the job 5 weeks and says he's doing his best to reduce expenses or increase revenue where he can. The main drivers of the budget hike are a new fire truck, personnel costs, and a new policing contract with the city of Gilbert. Another big contributor is the $45,000 Biwabik owes due to overpayment of state mineral taxes by the DNR. Iron Range Today reports the city opted to delay finalizing its levy until December 17th, in part to give Schultz more time to dig into the specifics. When the USDA buys food for its nutrition programs, nearly half the purchases go to food companies aligned with industrial agriculture. That's according to a new report, which includes details about a well-known Minnesota firm. In fiscal year 2024, Friends of the Earth researchers say the federal government spent $4.8 billion on food for programs that support school and senior meals, food banks, and tribal communities. Nearly half of that spending went to just 25 companies. Poultry giant Tyson Foods topped the list, and Minnesota-based Jennie-O Turkey landed at number 6. Chloe Waterman with Friends of the Earth says whether the government saves money on these contracts, it's leaving out too many smaller farms that emphasize sustainable practices.
Some of these foods may have a low sticker price, but a high cost to communities and to public health.
The USDA doesn't discuss production practices associated with the food it buys. But the report authors say it's likely the overwhelming majority of food comes from vendors using common industrial ag approaches, including concentrated animal feeding operations. For Jennie-O, the report points to a series of violations and settlements from the past decade, including food and worker safety. The company did not respond to a request for comment. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
Up North Report here on the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with the franchise Jen Kellen. And we're here until 9 o'clock before we hand things over to Malachi Coons for Headwaters, which might be broadcasting here in the Bemidji studios.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Don't tell them I told you.
I will not.
It is 7:06, and the classic movie series continues at the Edge Center for the Arts tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. This month's film is Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, starring Spencer Tracy, Katherine Hepburn, and Sidney Poitier. Here to talk more about it is Jack Nackbar. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Andrew. Good to be with you on a December morning, where the movie takes place in the middle of the summer, I believe.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll be a welcome relief.
So, yeah, well, let's talk about what is Guess Who's Coming to Dinner about?
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner is about two things. It is about a young couple who's in love and wants to get married after a very short courtship, and that's really a centerpiece of the movie itself. But the one that was maybe more important at the time, and maybe more important now, I'm not sure, is that it's an interracial marriage between the very popular Sidney Poitier and Katherine Hepburn's niece, Katherine Houghton. So it was a white-black relationship, and that was really the first one to handle that question of interracial marriage seriously, although there's some good feel of humor in the movie, amongst major stars.
Yeah, so speaking of stars, we got Spencer Tracy, Katherine Hepburn, Sidney Poitier. Is this the last Spencer Tracy movie?
It is the last Spencer Tracy. He died 2 weeks after the climax of the movie is a fairly long monologue that he gives, and a couple of weeks after that he died. So he was in rough shape actually while they were shooting the movie.
Yeah, so I'm curious about I didn't know that it was Katherine Hepburn's niece is Katherine Houghton.
Yes. So actually, Hepburn got her the role in this movie.
So I never heard of Katherine Houghton or seen her before. Whatever happened with her?
I don't think she did a lot. I think she was busy in various live and things, but she I don't think she ever had an outstanding known career afterwards. This is really her big role.
Mm-hmm. So with this movie, you mentioned that Spencer Tracy has the long speech kind of thing. Why did it seem like a good movie for this month in December?
I think it's a good movie for this month of December, that it's the holiday season. and things are supposed to be merry and happy, and they're not always. But, you know, the theme song that's played, that we hear off and on throughout this movie, is "That's the story of, that's the glory of love." And that's what this movie is about. But it says you gotta live a little. Things are gonna be bad a little, but finally love triumphs, and that's the centerpiece of the movie. And so we have the warmth of young love. We have parental love in here on behalf of both of the people who want to get married. So that love's all around, and what could be more holiday-ish than that?
Yeah, that's true. So one thing I have a problem with this movie is, and it's not the movie's fault, this is the award season fault, is Katharine Hepburn won Best Actress for this movie, but this was the same year as The Graduate, Bonnie and Clyde, and then Audrey Hepburn in Wait Until Dark. What are your thoughts on Katharine Hepburn getting the Oscar for this movie?
She's very good in this, and it's not undeserved. I think Spencer Tracy should have won, the male one, and he didn't. And Sidney Poitier is really, really good in this movie as well. So there were 11 nominations, and the movie just won two, one of them being Katharine Hepburn, and the other, I think, Best Story. But it's not undeserved, she won four in her career. She won four Academy Awards. This was her third one. And so she was a huge major star, and it may have been a little bit of a gift, although she's good in it.
Yeah, she is good. It's interesting because this was always the year that's talked about as like kind of the year when new Hollywood was starting to spread into kind of the mainstream.
Yeah, and This is really kind of an old Hollywood movie. We're talking about a movie centered on major stars, and a movie that is reliant on talk. The first half of the movie, almost all of it takes place in Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn's home, and they get out a little more in the second half of the movie, but it's still they're meeting and talking with each other. So it's a very much dialogue centered movie rather than action and stuff, and to that degree is you could argue is kind of it's an old-fashioned picture.
Yeah,
not a new age one like Bonnie and Clyde was.
So another person I want to talk about is the director, Stanley Kramer, who's got quite the list of great movies under his name. The Defiant Ones, On the Beach, which I absolutely love, Inherit the Wind, Judgment at Nuremberg, It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World. Where did you stand on Stanley Kramer's career?
Yeah, well, I think I stand with you 100% on that. He had the reputation of being the so-called the issues director, the guy who liked to take on social problems, going way back to Inherit the Wind and Evolution and moving up to interracial marriage on this, and he was famous for that. But he made good movies as well. There's a lot of drama and tension, and a lot of the skills of the performers he really brings out in this movie. So he has a deserved career as a really major American director, I think.
Yeah, and the movie looks beautiful, too. I got a chance to watch it last night. The shots of them, like, on their terrace or whatever, their patio area just looked beautiful.
Yeah. It's a nice movie. Very traditional though in its style. He's not known as being a terrific stylist, but as a very competent storyteller, and that's really true here too.
How was this movie received when it came out by the public?
This movie was received with a whole lot of appreciation.
Okay.
It was the second leading box office movie of the year. It did almost $57 million at the box office on a $4 million cost to make the picture. So it was a huge hit. And then, of course, was nominated for 11 Academy Awards, so it was well known. It was released in December and played well into the new year. And just as a little parenthetical note, there's a reference in the movie to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, which would have been appropriate when the movie was made and released in 67. But the movie was still playing when Martin Luther King Jr. was murdered in early in 68. And they actually, for a while, removed the reference from the movie to Martin Luther King because he'd just been murdered. And then sometime later, they put it back in. Because the reference meant he was still alive when they referred to him in the movie, which wasn't the case.
So this is, I guess, the last Spencer and Tracy, or no, not Spencer and Tracy, Hepburn and Tracy movie we got. Where does this rank on, is this your favorite Spencer? No, Hepburn and Tracy collaboration?
Yeah, it is my favorite one. They did nine, so there's a lot to compare here. But the one, you know, one I like a lot that you don't hear much about is a movie called, I think, Without Love.
Oh.
I think it's the name of it. I that could be wrong. Where they meet, they have the usual cute meet, and he forces his way into Katharine Hepburn's house in that movie because he wants to work on some made during the 40s and make some more material kinds of things in her basement. And it's very funny and kind of touching in a way, and I think an underappreciated movie from the 40s.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I've only seen this one and then Adam's Rib and Woman of the Year. Those are the only ones I've seen. And I enjoyed them. Yeah. I've been meaning to rewatch Adam's Rib recently.
I remember seeing Adam's Rib at the huge Radio City Theater in Minneapolis.
Oh, wow.
And it was on Sunday afternoon, and I went with my mother and dad. I was just a little kid, essentially. And, we had to get help from the ushers. The place was almost full.
All right. Well, so, Jack, this is kind of a side tangent. There was some news about, like, Warner Brothers being for sale, and Netflix is talking about buying, and now Paramount's in the... What's kind of your thoughts about what's going on currently with the movie studio system?
Well, I think what we're talking about essentially now is the power of television and the new network. So there's Paramount TV, and they're talking about coming together with Netflix, which is exclusively television, although they're making movies now. Netflix is that sometimes get a theater release before going to TV. But the point is that television is where people watch movies now, and they've become more expensive, and people don't go see them as often as they used to, but they do watch them on TV and will pay to watch them on TV. The movies might appear on television now, but you have to pay $20 to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still a lot cheaper if you've got a house full of people who want to watch it than going to the movies.
Yeah, but the unfortunate thing is, like, I feel like we're losing that kind of what makes the movie special of just, like,
the communal.
Going in the theater, being in a room full of people, and just kind of not worrying about your phone for 2 hours and stuff like that, just enjoying
absolutely
the experience.
Absolutely, I agree. It was always special when you had to go out a little bit to see the movies and kind of look forward to to it, and B, with other people who are reacting and enjoying it, especially in a good movie. So it's a better experience than just sitting around in your living room watching it, it seems to me. But that's the way life is.
All right. Well, thank you, Jack. So tomorrow night at 6:30, can we expect a cartoon as well?
We can, and it's free, so people are welcome to come out. I think the snow is over, so they can come out to see the film and see it and enjoy it free at 6:30 at the Edge Center in Big Fork with a cartoon that is not Christmas-oriented directly, but the characters are named after a popular Christmas drink.
Oh. That's a great hint.
Well, thank you, Jack, for joining us.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Andrew.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
See you at the movies, yeah.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now we're going to hear a tune from Jeff Tweedy. This song is called Enough.
Has it ever been enough? Has it ever been okay? Have you ever felt full? At the end of the day?